Hey, let's go. You ready, Mark?
Yes, of course I'm ready. Born ready.
Nice. All right. Well, welcome back to From the Ground Up with Mark Weller. I'm Matt Rienzo here with Mark Weller. Mark, everything going well? What's going on in your world?
Oh, things are great. You know, it's just been it's been a great time. And we've been really busy, as I say, pretty much every podcast, because we are
super busy,
really busy with all the great projects we're working on, looking at some new ones. And a lot of the hospitality projects seem to still be moving along pretty well, in spite of some other difficulties in the real estate industry, you know, around office and some other things. But yeah, things are really well, and we're really excited.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for today's show. It's going to be great. We have a really unique and awesome guest, kind of unique topic. So a few things we're going to talk about are definitely pretty unique. So let's get rolling. Peggy Vanipel is managing principal at Thornton Tomasetti, a global consulting firm with over 1,600 engineers, scientists, and architects. This includes, and they worked on structural design of the 1,400-foot Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It's famous from the movie Entrapment. Mark, have you seen that movie?
Oh, actually, I haven't, but I'm going to watch it tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it tonight as well, just because of this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So, they also worked on the structural design of the partially constructed 3,200-foot-plus Jeddah Tower, which is otherwise known as the Kingdom Tower in Saudi Arabia. And then more locally, they've worked on a bunch of things. Nats Park, the Under Armour headquarters in Baltimore, Marriott headquarters in Bethesda, and a bunch of other stuff too. So the firm is obviously exceptional at what they do. They specialize in practices, including forensics. They look at structural failures and accidents. Another one of these specialty groups is a protective design and security practice, a branch which Peggy started in the firm's Washington, D.C. office in 2004. And then besides being active in all the technical work that she does, Peggy's the director of the firm's Washington, D.C. office, and she sits on the firm's board of directors. She's also worked on the protection of buildings and spaces all over the world, including over 20 U.S. embassies, museums, higher ed facilities, courthouses, and many other buildings in D.C. So this is going to be pretty cool, Mark, and definitely an exciting topic. So I'm pretty amazed, you know, on that write up, everything that their company is up to and everything Peggy's up to. So I'm excited to hear what she's working on. So with that, let's invite Peggy on the show. Peggy, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to see you both today.
Yeah, Peggy, this is Mark. Thank you so much for being with us today. So I have a question for you, just to start, you know, with this, with what I have in front of me here, and what I studied up on this, and knowing what you all do. Protective design and security practice. What does that mean exactly? Explain to us and our listeners what you actually do.
Well, I'll say that I commonly get that question. And sometimes I kind of hesitate to tell people what I do. So the easy answer is sometimes—
Why, are you in the CIA or something?
Well, it's just, you know, people have often never heard of it, right? They don't even think about it. That there's somebody who specializes in thinking about how do you protect buildings, spaces, whether it's parks or event spaces, infrastructure from human-made threats and hazards, right? And so that's something that oftentimes I just kind of get a surprised look on people's face. They're sometimes confused. But then when I start talking to them about, you know, the details, you know, it can be anything from, you know, making the space a better place because you're preventing things like vandalism or vagrancy, preventing criminal events from happening, so different crimes. And then extreme things like explosives, hostile vehicles, which unfortunately has been happening much more and more, and things like airplane impacts, right? So these are you know, really not occurring on a regular basis, fortunately, kind of events that we're looking at. And then we're, so, you know, oftentimes people say, well, okay, so you're working for the U.S. government, which we do. We do a lot of work for the U.S. government. But we are doing work for all different kinds of facilities, making sure that people stay safe. And, you know, in our work, which is a little bit different from some of the other engineering disciplines, whereas we're very well defined what the loads considerations are, and there's codes surrounding it. There are codes like that for the federal government, But for some of these, you know, public facilities or commercial facilities, there aren't. So we're oftentimes helping them look at intelligence information, crime statistics, and helping them figure out, well, what can we do, you know, that isn't going to, that is going to create security and safety around my building, but not at the cost of architecture or functioning, you know, the functionality of the building, or creating a welcoming environment. So those are typically the hardest projects, because you're trying to create this environment of, you know, a project where people can walk in and feel like, you know, they can go shopping or they can enjoy an event. But at the same time, you're trying to protect them.
You know, that brings up another subject matter within there, which is, you know, we've done these very large sites, like we just finished the Port Covington project in Baltimore, which is, you know, probably over 100 acres, you know, that's built now. There's 50 some acres that are built out now, 100 acres of city blocks and so on. And you know, you have a threat from about, you know, all around the streets, from the highways. You have a threat from terrorists or just gunmen and so on. Are you dealing with that as well? Like what would happen in the physical environment beyond the building?
Absolutely. So we do work in master plans, right? Or in campuses. So I mentioned earlier that we've done work on, you know, things like schools, or museum campuses, but for example, for a higher education campus, we've done work in, especially in schools that are in urban environments, right?
Sure.
Where oftentimes, and I think we all know there's a lot of these, the really high-end private schools that are in an urban environment that is sometimes a dangerous environment outside of the school's bubble. So we look at with the school kind of their perimeter, you know, what they're doing for off-campus housing, and trying to understand how do we strike that balance of creating that college environment, right, where kids feel free to learn and to have fun, but at the same time address the issues that might be at their periphery, right? And one tension we're seeing now too is that a lot of these higher ed facilities, they're getting pushback from the surrounding community for turning their backs on the community, right? So from the perspective of engaging with the surrounding community, how do you do that in a way and invite the surrounding community into the school without compromising the student's safety?
Yeah, no, that's fascinating stuff. And I travel around a lot. I have kids in different schools and so on. And I see it. And when you see sort of, in some cases, the deterioration of some of the cities in America, security and safety, I would imagine this is incredibly, incredibly important. So that's awesome work. And I'm glad to hear that you're focused on it. So changing up a little bit here, I saw you have a structural degree from MIT. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Congratulations. We don't see a lot of those. And a civil engineering degree from NYU. Tell us how you developed this passion for this business, in particular, how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So when I was a teenager, I felt, and I grew up in New York City, so I really felt this appreciation for the built environment and just how cities worked, you know, how buildings got built. I loved observing, you know, what was being built around the city. And at that time, when I was growing up, New York City was going through a transformation as well. I didn't have any family members that were in the business, so I didn't have anybody that I could talk to for advice about how do I even get into this? But fortunately, I had high school counselors who suggested two programs to me. One called the ACE Mentor Program, and that's ACE stands for Architecture, Construction, and Engineering, which was started around the time I was in high school. And coincidentally, Thornton Tomasetti was one of the founding firms for that program. And then also the New York School Construction Authority had a summer internship program for high school students, which matched up students with summer jobs in the field and then dedicated one day a week to teaching the students about the AEC industry. And so they would have professionals come in and tell you about what they were doing. So that really helped me because it helped me understand that there are a lot of different people who are involved in this business, right, with a lot of different degrees and backgrounds. So you had architects, you have the engineers, you have the contractors, and then all in between. And then what the different engineering disciplines even did, right? So that helped me decode that sufficiently that I could figure out that I wanted to go into civil engineering in undergrad. So that went great. I really enjoyed my undergrad. I survived because it's the thing they tell you when you come into engineering school commonly is look to your left and right. Half these people will not be here at graduation. And that was true. That did happen. But I survived it and I thrived. And so I continued to MIT. And MIT was an amazing experience. The engineering school was, you know, I could never imagine just the caliber of people that I was with and learned from. And they were from all over the world. So talk about a really humbling experience because you think you're smart and then you go there and you realize you're not. You're not that smart, right? So there's that, but then also you have the opportunity to take courses at Sloan Business School, at Harvard. So you could really gain a lot of kind of diversity in your educational experience, which I'm happy that I had the foresight to do that. I don't know how I did, but I think has helped me in my career because the reality is, as an engineer, you're not just doing your work, you know, on your own. You are coordinating, collaborating with all different people in your field. So that's the school backgrounds. When I graduated, which was in 2001, I started with Thornton Tomasetti in New York City. Just a month after I started, September 11th happened. And I was in viewing sight of the World Trade Center. So I saw everything was there. And our firm was actually involved in the cleanup as well. So we were very close to it. But prior to that, our firm had been involved in protective design for what it was at that time, which was mostly military structures. And then we helped author the guidelines for protecting U.S. embassies after the 1983 bombing of the U.S. embassy in Beirut. So we were involved in that type of work. But obviously after September 11th, and even after the Oklahoma City bombing, I would say, that work had really started to evolve in that it started to involve other types of buildings, whether it was courthouses, you know, here domestically or government buildings. So after September 11th, that part of our business really took off. I basically, you know, said I'm interested. I want to try it out. And I really enjoyed it. And I haven't looked back.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when we were talking earlier. Is September 11th, obviously terrible day for everyone in this country, must have been a real catalyst for the evolution of your business, unfortunately.
Right.
To another degree, I mean, you mentioned Beirut and other things, the embassy and that had already occurred and things that have occurred since. But really, I feel like 9/11 must have been like a real inflection point for this type of work to really just get catapulted to another level of importance, because really we got, you know, thrown into this new era of, and it wasn't new, but it just became so prevalent in our minds of terrorism and protecting against that. So, so it sounds like that was a true evolution in the business.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think one thing that I've seen over my 20 years in this business is that it is cyclical, right? In that an event happens and people panic and then they want to do something right away. And I think you see marks of that all over DC, right? Of things that are temporarily put in place, whether it be, you know, the events of September 11th, or if there is an active assailant event someplace, or what happened in 2021 at the U.S. Capitol, right? So you see a lot of reaction. And part of my job is really just trying to listen to the clients and understand their concerns and try to address them, but in a way that it's practical and rational and looking at things not just to react to the short term, but in the long term, right? In terms of what new events may occur or not, right? And giving a flexibility to them to increase their security posture or decrease it, right? If it's appropriate based on what's happening in the world.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I want to just ask one follow-up question to your kind of path to get where you are, and then we'll switch to other items. But so you mentioned your background and how you got to where you are in the undergrad. I mean, I guess if there were young people who find this fascinating, you really have to study it in college, right? And then get a postgraduate degree. That's kind of the path to get into something like this. I mean, you have to know in high school that you want to get into this almost, so you can go to the proper school to get that undergraduate education.
Yeah, I would say you would need in my area to have a degree in engineering or in security. We have some people who are, they're not necessarily engineers, but they have a security background, whether it be right. law enforcement or actually being installers of security systems. But the most prevalent degree is engineering. And the reason for it is that there is a mindset that you get from going to engineering school, and it's about solving problems, right? And so that problem solving, and then also the reality is that we need to be able to read drawings, understand how structures work, right? So you need to have this basic knowledge. And some of our engineers in the protective design group, they have to really high-end, very complicated structural analyses to understand how a blast interacts with a structure or with a curtain wall, right? So you need that kind of technical background. So it's something that I would say I advise people who have an interest in some kind of engineering, that I think it's the type of degree that it is so, it's such a great foundation for really a lot of different careers. I know engineers, right. civil engineers even specifically, who have gone into careers in law, in finance, in development. And, you know, their engineering degree was really just help them have a certain approach to solving problems. And then they learned everything they needed to for that job on the job or going to law school or, you know, to business school. So I think mm-hmm. it's a really great place to start. And then I think it gives you opportunity to spread your wings and do so many other things in the world.
Yes. And thinking about how you all are doing in our project in Grand Bahama, your team out in New York is working on it, specifically on the structural design, which could mean a lot of different things depending on where the project is. But in the case of Grand Bahama in the Bahamas, it entails hurricane resilience and engineering to withstand hurricane winds and storm surge, you know, very severe storm surge. So, and more, but take us through what you might be doing at a project such as ours in Grand Bahama to be a contributor on the team.
Absolutely. So on Grand Bahama project, which we are really excited to be working on with you, because, you know, it's not your typical hotel project, right? It's not a simple design. And we embrace those types of projects because they really push our engineering skills. We are designing for those hurricanes.
Hold on. Do you mean that like 200 mile an hour winds, 200 yeah, exactly. mile an hour winds, sideways rain and a 10 foot surge
for 48 hours,
48 hours straight,
sitting right over the island.
Right? Actually and challenges somebody from MIT. This is good to hear.
Okay, it's, I mean, that kind of loading, sustained loading, is something that there's not a cookie cutter, solution for, right? But the funny thing is that on that project and also on that project, it's not, you have a lot of small, unique structures. And I say it's not cookie cutter, but I think the funny thing on that project is that we are trying to somewhat make it cookie cutter in that we're trying to design a common framing system, materials and layout to simplify the construction and to also take into account the skills of your local trades, right? We're not building in a big city. Right. So trying to understand what is happening and what's available locally there so that our structural system can actually be as efficient as possible. Right. And then we've been working with the architect to come up with some really cool concepts to prefabricate everything and flat pack it for shipping and simple local erections. So, you know, in top of the loadings, it's trying to look at innovative ways to design so that you can expedite the schedule, you know, simplify the materials that you need, which are, you know, that's what makes these projects fun, right? So we were glad to be able to contribute in that way to that project.
No, that's great. And as we were kind of prepping for this, you know, I was thinking a lot about that environmental component because I knew the work that you were doing in Grand Bahama, that your team was doing in Grand Bahama. But as we learn more about the blast and all the other things you mentioned earlier, it's just fascinating the breadth of different issues that you're thinking about on all these different projects. It's a lot. So, but it's really cool. It's really interesting and something that most people don't even think about for a second. They don't even know that it's happening behind the scenes. They just assume their building is structurally sound and it's ready to go. So it's great to hear, you know, that all this is going on behind the scenes. Could you talk for a second? I mean, obviously we've talked about your background and you're an engineer by trade, but talk a little bit about the role of an engineer in real estate development, like in the modern real estate development world. Talk about, for those who maybe aren't as familiar, talk about what that role is and how you feel about that role in real estate development.
Before I do that, I do want to say something in response to your last comment about the being behind the scenes and people not really appreciating that the structure is going to stand up, that they're safe. I will say for me, the biggest compliment on a project is people don't realize that those considerations have been put into place. So that means that, they're walking to the facility or onto the campus and the security is essentially invisible to them, right? Because the flip side of that is that the security is so overbearing, right? That's the first impression.
So noticeable, yeah.
Right. So connecting that to the role in the development world, one of the things that I've really appreciated about my career is that in addition to impacting the structure, which impacts everything from your programmable area to the openness of the space, right? As structural engineers, we're commonly being pushed to increase the spans, right? Get rid of as many columns as possible.
Yeah, right.
So there is a huge impact from a development perspective in terms of the marketability of your building, right? Or the cost of your building, right? Taking off inches of slab, right? In order to make it as cost effective as possible. Or like I was talking on the Grand Bahama project, making it as repetitive as possible, but still unique, right? So that you're cost effective, right? And it's simple to construct. So there's an elegance in that simplicity, right? We could design columns of all different sizes around the building, and that would be a nightmare to construct. So there's that. But also the work that I do, I impact the site and the enclosure of the building. So very often when I have clients who are either trying to reposition a site and try to market it to somebody who has security concerns or trying to develop a site, I will work with them from the master planning, point of the project to lay out the site so that it is conducive to these considerations. So everything from the access points to the site, to circulation, to how loading is done, how screening of deliveries is done, all of those things, parking and where that's located, because there's things that you could do that could really be conducive to having a safe and secure campus. There's things that you can do that can be really detrimental, and it takes some foresight to do that. So that's been very interesting to me to be able to help owners in their strategizing. And honestly, for me, that's my passion, and how I've been able to build relationships with developers all around DC, and around the country, because they know that I will help them look at it, but not just from a security perspective, but I try to look at and talk to them from the first conversation about what are your overarching project goals, right? What do you want this campus, this building to feel like, right? And try to balance that with security, because to me, that is the most successful kind of project, right? Where you're looking at it holistically that way. But that's, so that has been for me the most fun part of the career, to just feel like you can contribute that way to the successful development of a property or the marketing of a property. and the successful leasing of a property. So that's been my involvement on the development side.
Well, that's really cool. And I'm curious, you know, you have a lot of experience working on jobs, working on projects specific, but you're also now, or at some point became a serious leader of the company, opening the DC office, running the DC office, and, you know, starting all these different divisions. How much time do you spend leading versus running cool projects? And how do you feel about one versus the other?
Well, it depends on the day, but I would say that I am 50-50. I love the technical work and I love the strategizing, as I mentioned to you. I also have such a long history on projects. I'm already at the point mm-hmm. where projects that I helped get leased a decade ago are coming up to, you know, the expiration of their lease, and I'm trying to help them, you know, renegotiate their leases. So I have a lot of historic knowledge about projects that I can contribute very well, or historic knowledge of the projects where it helps them figure out, well, this is what was built. How do we modify that moving into the future? I've been very excited by the expansion of our work into K-12, into high-end luxury residential, right? And taking mm-hmm. the application of the work that we've done on, you know, government projects in the past to these new types of projects that have different security concerns, but a lot of the same kind of core principles still apply. So that has been fun for me to try to understand this new type of client and try to modify what we're doing to respond to their needs, right? When you're dealing with elementary school children, that is very different than if you have a campus of intelligence, you know, agencies. So that is something that has been a fun challenge for me. But then I also am very passionate about running our firm. And that has been, interesting for me because we are also evolving with the world. We are much more looking at things like resilience and sustainability. We have resilience and sustainability groups. And as being part of the board of directors, I have to come out of the shell of DC office and protective design and security and really broaden my mindset to understand what's happening in the world that mm-hmm. We need to address as a firm, right? So I've really enjoyed that because it's taken me from being hyper-focused in one area to really learning about a lot of different things. And what I'm looking for is a challenge, right? Not that I'm bored with my technical work. I don't think I ever will be, but I feel like it's great to be able to influence 1,600 people and all of their projects as opposed to, you know, the 60 people in our office. So that's been really cool for me.
All right, I'm gonna throw a tough one at you. What is the coolest, most exciting project that you've ever worked on?
The coolest, most exciting project. Ooh, that's a tough one.
I know it always is because people.
How about we let her pick three?
No, she's got to pick one first.
All right, one. Then we'll make her pick another one.
Tough, tough. And then you can pick two. Okay, two. Okay. But it's tough. It's always a tough question for people because they. During your, you know, even if you just take 5 or 10 years, you've done so much work. It's always a challenge.
Yeah, it is a challenge. So I will say that the coolest project I worked on that never actually happened was the pursuit of the FBI headquarters in DC. So that project, I had worked on it for probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, even before the pursuit happened, right? And so that was working with different owners of different sites, looking at their sites, even the ones that were not shortlisted, right? So I was looking at all kinds of sites around Virginia, Maryland, trying to help the owners position themselves to bid to FBI for even consideration and the GSA for consideration. So that was super interesting because it was looking at how do you transform these places that some of them had these old company headquarters on them. Some of them were, teeny tiny pieces of land anyway. So that was very interesting because it was strategically looking at all these different sites.
Yeah.
And then ultimately looking at the actual pursuit, right, and working with the developer on trying to, at the same time, and I don't know how much you guys know about how that pursuit was happening, but
you were
basically proposing on the three different sites and trying to design a facility for the FBI that met their requirements on all three sites. And so, again, strategizing on those three sites, how do we make that work? And then helping the owner try to figure out how to value the Hoover building, right? So it was extremely complicated for so many reasons, but had all those, basically I felt like was taking all this knowledge I had built up over the years and trying to make come to fruition this enormous project that had such significance, right? And then ultimately it got canceled, but has been very much in the news, in the last couple of years, in terms of that moving forward at some time soon.
It's back in the news now.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's cool. And I know what you mean. You looked at it from so many different angles and so many different places and trying to put the two together. And so that's cool. So you'll probably get another chance at it. You'll probably get another bite at the apple, right?
I feel like it's a project that I have to work on before I retire. So that
it's your destiny and a legacy project for your career and your company.
Yes, for sure. So I feel like it's just bringing together a lot of things.
Well, that was a good answer.
That was a good answer.
For one, and
can I get one more? What's the next one of your next coolest ones?
That got built.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of. Well, I'm going to bring it back to the Health and Human Services headquarters in Rockville. And I bring it back to that since I know your colleague, Shane, worked on that project.
That's at Twin Brook, right?
Yes, in Twin Brook. So it was owned by JBG. It was JBG then. And the pursuit of that project probably predated when I started getting involved, but it was 08. And it was, I think that project was a million square feet. And I was involved with JBG in the strategy of how do you propose on this project, and it was old building, how do you make it exciting for the government plus meet all of their security requirements, right? And so we looked at all kinds of things to make it within the rental rate that was, that was approved. And within the limits of, they weren't going to take down the structure. So what can the structure carry? And so the work that I did really did influence the strategy. Things like making the entire exterior curtain wall glass, right? It was like a precast facade in the past, kind of very standard 70s building. Yeah. And you wouldn't think that you would do a curtain wall, a full curtain wall building. It's expensive, but it was a lot of curtain wall. It was very repetitive. And what happened is that the curtain wall made a lot more sense because it minimized the amount of structural retrofit you had to do to the building because it was much lighter than doing a precast facade. So there were strategies like that. Also, we were looking at, they had this courtyard that was really not usable in the building. We're looking at strategies to engage that space with the building. And it could be anything from leaving it as a courtyard, but allowing people to utilize it, to enclosing it. And we did all kinds of studies, understanding the security requirements, the blast loads. And we ended up with an ETFE roof structure. And that ended up being the most cost-effective and the most appealing from an aesthetic perspective. And if you ever go visit that space now, that is a celebrated space. It is an amazing government space. The end result, JBG did win the project. We designed it, we constructed it with Davis Construction. And it was just the bringing together, I think, of a great collaboration between JBG's leadership, Gensler is the architect, and then Davis is the contractor. So it was very enjoyable to work on it.
That's an all-star team too. And that probably is a big part of it when you get to work with teams at that level. You just said that's just a superstar team, and especially at that period of time. JBG, Davis, Gensler, you all, you know, so that's great. That's fun. And that makes the project that much more fun.
No doubt. No, that's great. And that's a perfect segue to my last question, which was, you know, you were introduced to us by Shane Omar, who's one of our partners here at Weller. He obviously speaks very highly of you. And he says that you've contributed to successful projects over the years that he's worked on. And specifically, you all worked on federal government buildings, where your work with, you know, security and blast protection were critical. I don't want to embarrass you, but he did say a lot of good things about you. And, you know, one of the biggest things was that you're just a great problem solver and very client focused, and that you have a figure it out together attitude. And then he also went on to say that you have experience in other areas above and beyond the typical engineer, and that you're the most trusted go-to person in this space. So that's pretty high praise and
wow,
and pretty awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah. And Shane has been incredible to work with. You know, when he talks about working together to solve a problem, I mean, Shane and I would look at him. He had a specialty on some of the projects I was looking at on curtain wall and enclosures and pieing those out, right? And so we would look at it in, you know, so many dozens of different ways. How do we do this more cost effectively, right? How do we make it more energy efficient plus meet the blast requirements? I mean, there's all these different things that we would talk about. And I really appreciated him, you know, trying to understand where I was coming from, trying to think about it and come back to me with questions about it. I feel like that's what keeps me in this business, right? It's those kinds of relationships and learning from others' experience. I mean, he had the experience in the construction world. So he would say, well, that's not constructible. You know, how do we do it so that we can actually build this, right? And so learning from him helped me be a better consultant, right, to JBG or the other companies that he was working with on whatever project. And it's been fun too to see the evolution of his career when he was with JBG Smith and won the bid for Amazon headquarters too. It was nice to have a friend in the room when we were interviewing to be the structural engineer for the project. And that project is another example of an incredible team. When I talk to anybody about, and that's Met Square, when I talk to anybody, whether it's Clark or ZGF who worked on that project, it was like a dream team that made that project happen and realized that project through COVID, right? And now it's incredible to see it built and transform Crystal City.
Yes, it is. It is incredible. These projects are so transformational and so important. And even when you have the vision and you understand what they're going to be, it's still always amazing to go and be able to see them finished when you haven't been involved or haven't been involved in a while, because they come out better than they look on paper, you know, and that's exciting. And I love what they're doing over there.
Yeah. I think that for me, you know, going back to the beginning of our conversation here, that interest that I had in the built environment, that kind of sparked my career. I found that it has been so rewarding to walk through these spaces that I've impacted, right? And I've, you know, and the pride that you have that I did this and I did this with my team, right? And it's going to, you know, change my city, right? Or these other cities. That has been really an incredible experience and why I love what we do.
Yes. It's so amazing. You say, I drove by the Port Covington project last night on my way back from out of town. And
now it's called Baltimore Peninsula.
Port Covington. But I drove through it, and it was just amazing. I mean, the built environment, as the sun's going down in the water and the street that turns into a space that can be for gathering, collective gathering, you know, for all kinds of festivals and so on. And just the landscape architecture and the level of detail there, and the first and second floors of the buildings, and you just see it come together. And it's just so amazing. I hope you get a chance to check out that. I'm really proud of the Weller companies finishing that project.
Beautiful.
Doing that.
Beautiful.
I have checked out. I will tell you that one of my favorite hotels in this area is the Pendry.
Oh, thank you.
In Baltimore. And I just had the pleasure of staying at the Pendry at the Southwest Waterfront that just opened.
Oh, nice.
Over this past weekend. So that was, you know, really nice.
There's no hotel on the planet like the Sagamore Pendry, just because it's over the water, you know, 7/8 of it's over the water. And even the other Pendries are nothing like it.
No, it's cool.
I mean, I love the one in DC, but my heart is with Baltimore, the one in Baltimore, because it is stunning.
We were fortunate. Like, I feel actually like it was a gift. It was a lot of hard work, but it was a gift to be able to, you know, develop concept, finish, and open that hotel, because it was a special place.
Yeah, congratulations on that, and nice. I also love the Sagamore Rye, so nice. that's a favorite.
Yes, that's always.
I will send you a bottle. I got one right here. So, I wanted to ask one follow up question. You mentioned when you're talking about Shane, you mentioned, you know, being successful through COVID, and what impacts has that had on your business, COVID? You know, obviously the office market has tanked because of it. Is it, as a result, is your business, getting less business, or is it pretty much stable because you're working on so many federal or government buildings, or just right. what kind of impact has that had on your company and your line of business in particular?
Yeah, so company-wide, we've definitely seen a slowdown, like everybody has, in commercial projects and even in residential, which was still busy last year. So we've seen projects pause and stop and reconsidered, right? In some cases, reduced in size.
Right.
But we are fortunate that we are so diversified in our work. We have all kinds of federal work all around the country and world, right? That doesn't stop. There's a lot of money from the infrastructure bill that impacts both the federal work, and also we're working on aviation projects. We're working on the new terminal at JFK Airport. Cool. And also at Pittsburgh International Airport. So those kinds of mega projects, plus we have projects overseas, you know, in all over, you know, commercial projects. Actually, we're seeing a lot of work at overbuilds at transportation hubs that we've been working on, which those are mega projects, which are all keeping us busy. So we feel fortunate. We're definitely keeping an eye on things and making sure that we are balancing our business. But, you know, I think that's what we all do in the development and AEC world, right? We just have to prepare ourselves and kind of, you know, be flexible with where our business goes.
Yeah, no doubt. That's interesting. And this has been a fascinating conversation. It opened my eyes to part of the industry that, frankly, I hadn't thought a whole lot about, even being in the industry. So we really appreciate your time today. It's just really cool and interesting conversation. So Peggy, thanks so much for being with us.
You know, it's so funny, Matt. I actually was taking notes, and one of the things I was going to tell one of my sons, who's trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life, he's thinking about after college going in the military. And I said, well, maybe in college you focus on security and security measures and security,
become a
security
cool.
expert. And I was like, there's just what you just said. There's just no shortage of need, and it's an only growing space. And then if you had military officer experience somewhere,
and then combined, engineering on top of it,
oh shoot, yeah, I'm sure you can do that all, but certainly, like, put a couple of those things together and you've got yourself a pretty good and interesting a career path.
I'll be ready to hire him, so if he goes down that path.
Michigan first and then the military. All right, I like it. I'll tell him he's got a job.
Absolutely. I love talking to kids too about what, you know, what the opportunities are. Obviously, sure. I'm really passionate about it. It's a lot of fun. And at the end of the day, it feels great to be able to keep people safe, right? And to make a difference in their lives, even if they don't realize it.
Yeah, this is just an awesome conversation. It's really interesting. So thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. It was great meeting the two of you. And hopefully one day I can stop up in Bethesda and meet you in person.
We would love that. Open invitation anytime. Let's go to lunch or something.
Wonderful.
So a big thank you to Peggy Vanipul for joining us today. We look forward to hosting many other industry executives and leaders on future episodes. So if you have an idea for who you'd like us to host or a topic, just hit us up on social media at Weller Development on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Rienzo. He's Mark Weller. Keep building, people.